Good morning, it's 9:30. This is a reading of the Green Valley News for Monday, November 24th. The Scottsdale developer is eyeing a new commercial center in Suarita, which could see the town landing a Target store and crossing a threshold to attracting bigger national brands. Simon CRE, a commercial real estate development firm, had filed a pre-application with the town of Suarita for a proposed center that would sit on Rancho Suarita property on the northeastern corner of South Rancho Resort Boulevard and Suarita Road. The site is in the open desert that's east of the entrance to Rancho Resort. Pima County parcel information lists the area as 17.3 acres. The Green Valley News has a pending records request for the pre-application information and any communication that's related to the development project. Suarita Economic Development Director Victor Gonzalez told the Green Valley News the plans are in the preliminary stages and negotiations are between Simon CRE and Rancho Suarita. He said a target hasn't been confirmed, but Simon CRE has targeted his partner, that is, with Target as the anchor store for several other developments. It'll be one large anchor and then two drive-through pads is what they're showing on the site plans, Gonzalez said. And they're showing a 10,000-square-foot commercial building, which could have multiple tenants. The pre-application gives the town staff a chance to work through some off-site improvements that are necessary to accommodate the commercial center, such as drainage, roadway, and intersection improvements. Gonzalez said that would also include how the commercial center would impact the Rancho Resort entrance, adding that the community's gate might need to be moved north. From the infrastructure standpoint, it's accommodating the type of improvements and also looking at what the impact brings to the residents, Gonzalez said. Is there going to be some kind of screening wall between the development and the neighborhood? All these things will still need to be fleshed out, so that's kind of where we're at with that. Rancho Suarita managing partner Jeremy Sharp declined to comment on the project on Friday, and Simon CRE didn't respond to a message for comment on Friday either. A target hasn't been confirmed as the anchor store for the proposed commercial center put forward by Simon CRE. Gonzalez said speculating on a target is premature, but added that Simon CRE recently completed a deal in Mesa with Target as the anchor. Simon CRE has had other anchor stores in its commercial developments in our state and other states, but four other Target anchor stores were recently added in addition to the Mesa Commercial Center, with two in Arizona, one in Idaho, and another one in New Mexico. I would say they're kind of kicking the dirt, seeing this is going to work or not on the land deal, Gonzalez said about Simon CRE. So that's between them and Rancho Suarita. And we're doing our due diligence on what is the public off-site infrastructure that's needed and or is what we have existing sufficient enough with some improvements to support that development. A target coming to Suarita would put it about 20 minutes south of an existing store on Irvington Road and I-19 at the Tucson Spectrum. Gonzalez said he didn't think it would cannibalize that customer base. He said there are several hundred thousand trips from Suarita, Green Valley, Corona de Tucson, and south along the I-19 corridor, including Nogales, to Target at the Spectrum. The town used Placer AI, an online platform that tracks mobile devices to accumulate data and then find out how much local and I-19 rail traffic is lost to Tucson, which is commonly referred to as leakage. The project is in a wait-and-see phase at this time, but it could mark a big step for the town in getting on the radar of national brands that might have balked when considering Suarita in the past. Gonzalez said it would be the next evolution of the town and put it more on par with Oro Valley and Marana. Not to take away from Walmart, but most communities, including communities like Benson, have a Walmart, he said. Nothing wrong with that. Walmart adds value to your community. It brings all those various sub-retailers, junior retailers to the market. But yeah, Target is kind of that next iteration. Gonzalez compared it to restaurants, saying towns typically start with well-known fast food brands like Burger King and McDonald's, and then move on to a Culver's, an Ahmad, or a Chipotle, and similar fast casuals before eventually getting a casual sit-down like Texas Roadhouse and so on. He said a target would be giving Sororita a movement into the fast casual phase of retail. So Target demonstrates to us that we're maturing as a community and a consumer base, he said. By the nature of having a Target, it could draw the next wave of retailers, restaurants, and whatever comes with those. Another benefit, Sororita is moving beyond just getting a look from major developers and brands to serious consideration with some planning. He found that Sororita will now be on Simon CRE's mind whether or not a Target or its commercial center project comes to fruition, adding that he and economic development specialist Alex Magellanes visited with Simon CRE during a convention just about a year ago. And little did we know, fast forward, we'd be connecting with them on this type of project, Gonzalez said. But at the time, we connected with them to say, hey, take a look at us. Sororita is growing. He said developers like Simon CRE are based in the Phoenix metro area, and there isn't a lot of reason to go outside of Phoenix, given the growth going out to the neighboring municipalities in Maricopa County. Magdalena said the town hears from residents often about getting more variety in sit-down restaurants. He said being on the map for Simon CRE and having a possible target like an anchor-like Target would make attracting a sit-down restaurant easier. So fast forward now to the we've connected with us, and the opportunity tells us that we're now on the map for retail stores like Target, Gonzalez said. And I think that regardless of what happens, this process will expose Sororita to those kind of developers. According to the U.S. Border Patrol, agents working the Interstate 19 immigration checkpoint near Tubac discovered anomalies in the trunk of a Nissan Versa using an X-ray machine on November 14th. Inside the trunk, agents found 20 pounds of methamphetamine concealed within packages of frozen meat, the agency said in its news release. The driver, a 32-year-old man from Mexico, was arrested and faces prosecution for narcotic smuggling. Sororita Police Chief John Nolan has been cleared by the Pima County Attorney's Office of any wrongdoing in connection with an August scuffle with a YouTube personality. Deputy County Attorney Chris Ward said that Nolan's use of force against James Springer was lawful and justified in a letter that was dated Thursday and sent to Sororita Town Manager Shane Dill. Becoming an Eagle Scout teaches young people valuable lessons that prepare them for challenges that they will face later on in life. A final major service requirement in earning the rank entails planning, developing, and leading a service project, something that Isabel Donnelly completed by removing graffiti from a collection of boulders above a Madera Canyon picnic area on November 15th. In the process of earning her Eagle rank, which includes 50 merit badges, Isabel said she's learned about herself and how to accomplish future goals. While the physical work of removing the graffiti took a day, it represented the culmination of years as a scout. The project began months earlier, and this summer, when Isabel received approval from the scouting committee, she began writing up the details. It was really good because it took me a very long time to actually do Eagle, because I know a lot of the time I was procrastinating or I was busy with other stuff, Isabel said. Isabel, a senior at Walden Grove High School, was a Girl Scout but had some issues finding a local troop for her age group. When she was 13, she joined Scouting America, formerly the Boy Scouts of America. The name change occurred early this year, and the organization now includes girls. Isabel's dad, Terry Donnelly, is the scoutmaster of her all-girls Sororita Troop 247, which he started after unsuccessfully attempting to start a Girl Scout troop in the area for Isabel's age group. The Girl Scouts are structured a little different, so they have different age groups, and some troops only take select age groups, he said. So I actually tried to start a troop down here in Girl Scouts for her age group. That didn't work out because they wanted a female leader. Isabel had been planning the Boulder Restoration Project since her freshman year of high school, when she saw the defaced rocks on a family hike. She finally remembers helping maintaining the canyon over the years with her troop. I remember in middle school, I really liked going out there and helping, she said. Troop 247 has a youth naturalist group membership with Friends of Madera Canyon, which supports conservation and education efforts in the canyon. Most of the tools and supplies Isabel and the volunteers used came from the parents of the scouts. The FOMC paid for the remaining supplies, which cost about $65. And the six-to-face boulder stretched out about 150 feet along a steep incline, a couple of hundred feet above the Madera Canyon picnic area. It was just a matter of getting volunteers to hike up there. It's a pretty steep hike. Short hike, but very steep, Terry said. The team of volunteers, which included Troop 247 scouts, primarily restored the boulders with wire brushes, environmentally friendly graffiti remover, and a lot of hard work, reserving the occasional precise use of a power drill to avoid damaging the rocks. I was hoping the paint would come off easier, but it didn't, Terry said. So we had to use a power drill with a wire wheel on some of it, but mostly the girls just used their elbow grease and those wire brushes. That seemed to work. FOMC President Dan White and President Emeritus Rusty Lombardo created the membership designation for Troop 247 in 2023, though the troop had been cleaning up the canyon for some time. It was a breakthrough with the Friends of Madera Canyon in engaging a long-term relationship with younger people, something we've been trying to do for years, Lombardo said. The troop has since been involved in several projects, including repairing the damaged visitor information center that included the rebuild of a wall, texturing, and a new paint job. Lombardo's also worked with the troop to repair damaged benches. Terry, who's on the board of directors with FOMC, says the partnership between the nonprofit and his troop has been beneficial for the girls, especially since the Friends work closely with the Forest Service in order to maintain the canyon. It's a good experience for scouts to get up there and work in the canyon with the Forest Service and the Friends. Isabel's Eagle Scouts project was one of three completed this fall by the girls from Troop 247. The other two projects, painting Southwest murals on two electrical boxes in Sorita by Avery Bryan and the construction of a nature trail at Good Shepherd United Church of Christ by Crystal Aguirre, were finished earlier in the season. Isabel and Avery are very close friends, making working on each other's Girl Scout or Eagle Scout projects even more rewarding for her. Terry says he's very proud of his daughter earning her Eagle Scout ranking, noting that she could have achieved it much earlier, but she didn't want to miss out on the experience in the Scouts. She just wanted to lay back and wait and enjoy the troop because she said she knew that as soon as she got her Eagle Scout, she wouldn't want to be going to scout meetings much anymore. Isabel believes she wouldn't have earned the top rank without motivation from her dad, especially since there were times where she wanted to quit scouting. He's quite strict, but if he wasn't the scoutmaster, I'd also say I wouldn't get Eagle, because then I wouldn't feel like I had to get Eagle. The biggest lessons Isabel takes away from the scouts is the value of patience and commitment. She plans to work in the medical field and says her experience in Scouts has taught her to be more outgoing on how to achieve goals. Before Scouts, I was very introverted, couldn't do much for myself. Now I have more experience with people. Isabel will be awarded the Eagle Scout at a special ceremony with the Friends of Madera Canyon. It's 9:45. Well, how about a little humor? Meandering the Mesquite. Upgrading sports viewing, helpful tweak for fans. This is written by Scott Dyke. Well, let's get one thing straight. This is an old school guy talking. Come to think of it, you can drop the school. Nonetheless, there is this long experience of absorbing televised athletics, ranging from Pat Summerall kicking a field goal in the snow on my snowy 12-inch TV set in 1958, to Will Smith's home run in the Game 7 of the World Series, with an ocean of venues in between. Some good stuff, but watching has become a little bit tedious, so the following changes could help. In soccer, the United States has never really embraced this sport like the rest of the globe, and the reason is obvious. Americans are long on touchdowns, runs, dunks, and birdies, but short on hours of back and forth without any results. The cure? Have each period include a one-on-one shootout of 5 minutes. The resultant scores count as one goal each. The old-fashioned goal scoring would count as five goals. This would keep up the final tallies, would also give the announcers a purpose for being. Basketball, easy fixes. Recapture the past. No more three-point goals, paving the way for interior action and more passing. Change the possession clock to 40 seconds in the NBA, 60 seconds for college, and lengthen the court to 100 feet. Raise the basket to 12 feet. When the game debuted, the average player was under 6 feet. Revive the palming violation. Enforce the 3-second lane violation. Move the foul line to 16 feet. Phew. Football. Well, give some credit to the NFL and the NCAA for being ahead of the curve when changes weren't required. These guys are bigger, faster, and stronger than Jim Thorpe was, but things have gotten a little bit out of hand. Currently, a 6'6" quarterback operating as a running back is afforded the protection from defensive hits. Hey, this isn't ballroom dancing. If a guy is a runner, then he loses that immunity. I know, if quarterbacks get hurt, the game changes. Well, then don't run, you're quarterback. Along those lines, the defensive lineman will have to pull up on a dime in the pass rush to avoid a flag. Think about stopping a locomotive going 60 miles per hour. Too much. The real tedium lies with the field goal. 50-yarders, unlike in Summerall's day, are pretty now routine. Making anything under 50 yards worth 1 point, and the defense gets to field 12 men. If this were to kick in, kickers better review their health plan. In baseball, the major leagues have become sensitive to the lack of action on the diamond, and they need to do better. Too many strikeouts. Pitchers today are a whole lot bigger than they were when the game was initiated back in the late 19th century. Move the mound back, or make three balls a walk. Golf. Recent changes in the ancient rules removed archaic penalties that were unfair, but the advancement of equipment, coupled with player size and conditioning, have made traditional courses pretty much obsolete. I say monitor ball and club manufacturing to less forgiving standards, narrow fairways, and grow rough. This would put a premium back on accuracy. In tennis, well, not too much input here. Initial exposure to the sport was an invitation to a major event. The friend who was the inviter donned wristbands, headbands, and practiced Jimmy Connor guttural grunts. I'll pass on that. Hockey, eliminate the fighting rules. Let hockey return to its roots and incisors when the ice was littered with gloves and teeth. And lastly, curling? Yeah, no changes needed. Scott Dyke is a Wyatt Earp historian, Western lecturer, and researcher. He's a member of the Western Writers of America. Some news from around the planet. Scientists are tracking individual monarch butterflies across North America for the first time using new solar-powered cellular tags that weigh only 60 milligrams, roughly one-tenth of the butterfly's weight. The New York Times reports that more than 400 monarchs have been tagged this fall, allowing researchers to follow their exact flight paths from places like Ontario, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey to their winter colonies in central Mexico. The real-time tracking offers insights, that is, into migration routes that have long been unclear, showing monarchs navigating storms, recovering after drifting off course, and taking unexpected paths. These monarch populations have plunged by about 80% since the 1980s. A moderate quake beneath the western Aegean Sea was felt across Greece's Attica region. Earth movements were also felt in western Nicaragua, western Costa Rica, central California, and northeastern Kentucky. A new global study has identified how little plastic it takes to kill marine wildlife, finding that many animals die after ingesting only a tiny number of pieces. Researchers analyzed more than 10,000 autopsies and modeled the point at which the swallowed plastic became lethal for seabirds, sea turtles, and marine mammals. Seabirds were especially vulnerable, with as few as 6 pea-sized fragments giving them a 90% chance of dying, while soft plastics and fishing gear posed the greatest danger to dolphins, to seals, and whales. The study found that nearly half of sea turtles, a third of seabirds, and 1 in 10 marine mammals that were examined had eaten some amount of plastic. Japan's Sakurajima volcano erupted with a series of violent blasts that blanketed nearby areas of Kyushu Island with ash and caused chaos for international and domestic flights at several airports. The ash soared 14,000 feet high above the volcano in Sakurajima's strongest eruption since 2019. Indonesia's Mount Sirimu erupted violently, forcing nearby residents to flee the volcano. An ash plume raising up to 54,000 feet above Java prompted aviation alerts in the region. Iceland warned that the ocean system that tempers its climate may falter, declaring the threat a matter of national security. Scientists warn that AMOC, a deep ocean engine that moves heat northward, is slowing as the Arctic melts and fresh water pours into the sea. If the conveyor belt of current collapses, winters across northern Europe could plunge into deep cold, while weather systems that farmers depend on from Africa to India could shift or fail. And for Icelanders, it could ravage elements of daily life, such as their fishing fleets, their roads, and their food supplies. Japan has enacted new rules allowing police to use rifles to kill bears as attacks on people reach record numbers, 13 deaths and more than 100 injuries reported since April. Northern prefectures such as Akita, Iwate, and Hokkaido have been the most affected, prompting the deployment of military units, drone surveillance, and expanded local authorization for emergency shootings. Officials say a combination of poor acorn harvests, rising bear populations, and a dwindling rural human population have drawn bears into towns in search of food. The government is forming rifle teams in each prefecture and encouraging residents to remove attractants and other nut-bearing trees near their homes. Authorities warn that the country also faces a shortage of hunters as its population ages. And Tropical Storm Fina was expected to become the earliest such tropical cyclone to strike Australia since Cyclone Alicia hit on November 21st of 2013. Looking at today in history, in 1859, British naturalist Charles Darwin published On the Origin of Species, which explained his theory of evolution by means of natural selection. In 1865, Mississippi became the first southern state to enact laws that became known as Black Codes, aimed at limiting the rights of newly freed blacks. Other states of the former Confederacy soon followed. In 1947, a group of writers, producers, and directors, who had become known as the Hollywood Ten, was cited for contempt of Congress for refusing to answer questions about alleged communist influence in the movie industry. In 1963, Jack Ruby shot and mortally wounded Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin of President John F. Kennedy, in a scene that was captured on live television. In 1971, a hijacker who became known as D.B. Cooper parachuted from a Northwest Orient Airlines 727 over the Pacific Northwest after receiving $200,000 in ransom. His fate remains unknown. In 1974, the bone fragments of a 3.2-million-year-old hominid were discovered by scientists in Ethiopia. The skeletal remains were nicknamed Lucy. And in 1991, Queen singer Freddie Mercury died in London at the age of 45 of AIDS-related pneumonia. Well, bladder issues are a relatively common problem that affects millions of people across the globe. Among the more common such issues is overactive bladder, or OAB, which the Cleveland Clinic estimates affects as many as 33 million adults in the United States. Bladder issues may not be easy to discuss, but the prevalence of OAB suggests millions can benefit from understanding the condition and learning what, if anything, can be done to prevent it. So what is it? The Canadian Urological Association notes that an overactive bladder does not store urine as effectively as a healthy bladder. It reports that most adults urinate up to 7 times in 24 hours, up to 2 times at night, at the frequency of that urination will depend on how much a person drinks. OAB can contribute to a combination of symptoms, including the urge to urinate more frequently, uncontrollable urges to pee, some incontinence, and the need to pee overnight, a condition that's known as nocturia. Anyone can develop OAB, but the Cleveland Clinic notes that it's most common among people that are age 65 and older. Women may develop OAB earlier than men, and may even be noticed and diagnosed around the age of 45. And it's more common among women than it is men. Women 40% to men's 30%. And it notes that the cause of OAB symptoms is typically unknown. However, it might be related to various conditions, including urinary tract infections, or an enlarged prostate, diseases of the brain and spinal cord, such as Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, and stroke. Prevention of OAB symptoms may be part of treatment. For example, the CUA notes that certain lifestyle changes may be recommended to people after they've been diagnosed with overactive bladder. Such measures include consuming fewer fluids and foods with caffeine, including coffee, tea, and chocolate, leaving alcohol alone, certain spicy and tomato-based foods, and certain citrus fruits, including lemons and oranges, may be recommended as well. Physicians also may recommend bladder training to improve symptoms. The CUA notes that training can help people learn to resist sudden urges to urinate, help them learn to wait a little bit longer before peeing, and strengthen the pelvic floor muscles. Overactive bladder is a common issue, and it's one that individuals can learn to manage effectively over time. And that is the reading of the Green Valley News for this Monday, the 24th day of November. Wishing you a great week and a happy Thanksgiving coming up. Mark DeGroft with you. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back on Wednesday. Until then, take care.